Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 128. My name is John. All these cats with holy jeans, dirty hair, and titty rings say, "What's your scene, man? We got these questions." The man was on a crusade. In the decade after World War II, the United States was enjoying the spotlight of the world stage. The U.S. and the Allies had faced one of the worst evils ever known to man and defeated it. But many people in our country believed a greater evil was coming. National Socialism, as I've mentioned before in this podcast, is a bizarre amalgam of government-controlled collectivism and private business ownership. The people of Germany had embraced the system and paid dearly for it. After the Axis was defeated, our strange bedfellow of the Second World War was vying for dominance, and their people had also embraced a disturbing collectivist system. Russia. Communist Russia. All of the government control and none of the private ownership. Citizens doing what they are told by their government overlords under fear of imprisonment or death. It is a system that freedom-loving people would reject, like how most of America used to be. Yet, he saw how the promises of communism could seduce people into believing it could solve problems that corporate cronyism creates. He was afraid the ideology of communism and its cousin socialism would make its way into the United States and destroy the nation from within. The man was on a crusade. Senator Joseph McCarthy was so sure communists had subverted various levels of government and American institutions, it became his life work to expose it to the American people. Initially, he claimed during a speech in West Virginia to have anywhere from 57 to 205 names of known communists. The amounts vary from different accounts, and there was no audio recording of the speech. Eventually, McCarthy pushed for and received a series of hearings where he brought 9 people who were or had been employed in the State Department. Now, this was a Republican accusing communist corruption in a Democrat administration. In a Senate where the Democrats were the majority. The committee was contentious from the beginning. The final report written by the majority party found McCarthy's accusations unwarranted. McCarthy didn't stop his crusade or his rhetoric in the Senate or in front of the press. He investigated people working in foreign policy who were believed to be homosexual because McCarthy believed them to be easy to blackmail by communists. Throughout these times, McCarthy resorted to mudslinging, baseless accusations, and defamation so much that the term McCarthyism was coined for his style of witch hunt tactics. Then he did something taboo in modern American politics, unless you're running in a presidential primary. McCarthy continued the same accusations he had made against the previous Democrat administration with the new Republican administration. Now he was accusing his own party of treason. Regardless of which side he was attacking, throwing out accusations is one thing, but backing them up with proof is another. Eventually, the demagoguery and attacks were too much for his allies, who felt McCarthy was severely damaging his own cause. The crusade disintegrated after years of committees and hearings filled with contentious arguments and humiliating defeats. Why did he do it? Why did he go on this crusade? A little over 100 years ago, after the First World War, the United States experienced the first Red Scare, as the ideology that had swept through Russia, causing their revolution and the rise of a communist government, came to America. Bolshevik-inspired labor unions caused strikes in places like Seattle and Boston. Additionally, bombs were mailed to dozens of politicians across the country, and a series of larger bombs were set off in 8 cities. The communist-inspired anarchists promised bloodshed for their perceived evils of capitalism. The United States government pushed back in the way a panicked government does. Ideas don't go away. The communists were there for the Great Depression, trying to coerce people once again to give in to centralized government overlords. Then the United States found itself in the Second World War, with communist Russia as an ally. So the communist rhetoric subsided for a while. But once the war was over, the Red Scare returned. And when I say as soon as the war was over, I mean it. 3 days after the war ended, a Soviet cipher clerk defected with evidence of a spy network in Canada and the United States. A couple of months later, an American woman working as a spy for Russia turned herself in, implicating 150 people working for the Soviets, including 37 government employees. And those were the ones the defectors and spies knew about. Anyone who knows espionage knows that your field agents are not given complete information on the whereabouts or number of other agents. People seeking to use unconstitutional means to overthrow the United States had infiltrated American society and American government. President Truman issued a loyalty order in March of 1947 that required all federal civil service employees be screened for loyalty. The order said that basis for determining disloyalty would be a finding of membership in, affiliation with, or sympathetic association with any organization determined by the Attorney General to be totalitarian, fascist, communist, or subversive, or advocating or approving the forceful denial of constitutional rights to other persons, or seeking to alter the form of government of the United States by unconstitutional means. Fuck. Republican Joseph McCarthy is known for seeking out subversives. But it was Democrat President Harry Truman that started the ball rolling. I point this out because for years I've heard people bickering that Trump signed this bad law or Obama signed that bad law. You could keep going back and changing out presidents' names, and yes, there are plenty of bad laws from the Patriot Act to so-called immigration reform. But if you look at almost all of those bad laws signed by a president, you'll see people in the opposing party passing it in other branches of government before it gets to the president. Similarly, McCarthy picked up what Truman wanted to be done. Quick trivia question. How many people from Hollywood were brought to testify before Joseph McCarthy in the Senate. Zero. The McCarthy hearings had nothing to do with Hollywood. That was done in the House Un-American Activities Committee, itself begun by a Democrat representative from Texas. These were separate activities in the government, but both called for a loyalty review of the people they investigated. Interesting phrase, isn't it? Loyalty review. I don't know about you, but that brings a little chill to the back of my neck. People were brought before McCarthy in Senate hearings, while others were brought before the House Un-American Activities Committee, or HUAC. These paranoid congressmen, representing an increasingly paranoid public, were driven to find subversive elements by any means necessary. That meant digging into people's pasts to see what they may or may not have done years before, and confronting them with it regardless of whether or not it was factual or still an accurate representation of who they are. It didn't matter if the evidence was questionable, exaggerated, or inconclusive. It didn't matter if the accusations made against a person were false. McCarthy especially pushed harder with more bravado and hyperbole when there was less evidence of someone's communist activity. Smear tactics were used to intimidate targets of the anti-communist hunt. Again, this was over multiple committees in the government, but McCarthy became the face of the hunt for subversives. Because of the actions of McCarthy and his cohorts, hundreds of people were imprisoned. Thousands lost their jobs and were blacklisted from working in their field. Some of the more affluent had the luxury of leaving the country to live far away from the accusations. Anti-communist laws were put in place in various levels of government. Later on, imprisonments were overturned, unconstitutional laws were repealed, but the blacklists lingered for quite some time. Now, this is the part of the podcast where, if I were to ever gain notoriety, some agent of evil could pull what I'm about to say out of context. If that were to happen, I don't know what I'd do or how far I would take it, but I'll jump off that bridge when I come to it. First, there was ample evidence of communist subversiveness for decades prior to McCarthy's crusade. Second, observing the current state of this country, I believe the United States is very nearly a national socialist nation and will likely be a full socialist nation in my lifetime. Third, you recall that Karl Marx considered socialism to be a necessary step to reach communism. Putting those facts and predictions together, here is your out-of-context quote. Joseph McCarthy, along with all the other congressional committees, was absolutely right to fear communist subversion in the United States. Joseph McCarthy was absolutely right that communists were seeking to overthrow the United States, and now, generations later, it appears that will come to pass. But his tactics, his actions, his crusade did it all the wrong way. You'll know they're out to ruin me if they don't include that last sentence. Now, I've been saying on this podcast pretty frequently over the past 10 plus years that I don't believe in collectivist forms of government, and especially those with centralized government. Even without the hatred and genocide, National Socialism is a horrible system. Even without the tyranny of the majority, socialism is a disgusting system. Even without the atrocities, communism is a terrifying system. However, if you are a National Socialist, socialist, or communist, I don't care. I've stated in this podcast so many times I've lost count that if you want to be a socialist, then get together with your socialist friends and be socialists together. But it never ends there. It never ends with any of these collectivist systems. Now, once these intellectual junkies get hooked on their beloved collective, they have to get others hooked on it as well. If some people don't want to go along with their madness, then collectivists do what they need to in order to force their ideology on everyone else. The communists overthrew the Russian government a little over a century ago, and then set their sights on the United States. Again, I've said this many times before. The United States has never fully lived up to its promises. And compromises that should not have been made at the founding of the country were still done out of desperation to get the nation started. And we are still paying for those mistakes today. However, the United States was trying and making improvements, even if those improvements were not coming as quickly as they needed to be. Nevertheless, despite the mistakes, we were getting better and stronger, even though it was always a precarious climb. To me, the moment that improvement ended was the day the 16th Amendment passed. Once government was given the permission to take the income of private citizens via tax, our downfall began. Once government got to stick their nose in the business and finances of the citizens, it began to spread into every aspect of our lives, to the point where now there's almost no part of your life that is untouched by government interference. As government influence increased on our lives, their programs were forced upon us. New Deals, Great Society, each one creating more problems than it purported to solve, and inching us further into the mixture of private business and government control we have now, just like the National Socialists wanted in Germany 85 years ago. We have one of the major political parties overtaken by socialists who are looking to continue to erode the remaining individual freedom in America. If you listen carefully to the next generation rising in the party ranks, you'll hear clear signs of communism in their rhetoric. So yeah, they're bad. The ideology is a cancer to anyone who believes in individual liberty and personal responsibility. I still don't care if you believe in such nonsense, so long as you don't try to force other people to go along with it. But that was the problem during the Red Scares. These infiltrators did want to force others to go along with their ideology. They still do. They did not, and still do not, want to present their beliefs publicly and give people the choice to join them in their cause. They were doing it secretly, with the hope that by the time the general public caught on, it would be too late. So, here was a government who saw a major world power already overthrown by communist ideology, and given evidence that their own country was being infiltrated by the same ideology, with the intention of disrupting and even destroying it from within. How would you handle it? If you were in a position of power in the United States government and you found out people were secretly trying to destroy everything you believe in, what would you do? You'd want to know, wouldn't you? I mean, I would want to know. I don't care about people's ideology until they're trying to force it upon me. Infiltrating my country with the intention of overthrowing it to install their government is sure as hell trying to force their ideology on us. I would want that information out of the shadows and into the light. But how do you go about doing that? Especially when the clandestine agents will not be forthcoming. What were McCarthy's tactics? Hyperbole, exaggerating statistics, extreme rhetoric, bullying, mudslinging, intimidation, equating accusation with guilt, demagoguery, smear tactics, digging up minutiae from a person's past. 2,000 government employees lost their jobs. The atmosphere created by McCarthyism and by HUAC blacklisted thousands of people who may or may not have been connected to the conspiracy. The tactics eventually brought about their own destruction. As the witch hunt destroyed people's lives, public opinion turned. People realized that intimidation and rhetoric does not mean a person is guilty. Causing people to lose their livelihood just because you think they might be guilty of something you don't like is bullying taken to its extreme. Now, as I'm sitting here saying this, I feel I need to go on a brief tangent. Let me just repeat what I said about McCarthy's tactics: hyperbole, exaggerating statistics, extreme rhetoric, bullying, mudslinging, intimidation, equating accusations with guilt, demagoguery, smear tactics, digging up minutiae from a person's past. Isn't that par for the course, politics today? Hasn't it been that way for quite some time? I mean, I could spend the next several podcasts on the hyperbole and rhetoric of President Trump alone. But how many times have we seen, for example, a Supreme Court nominee having false accusations or exaggerated claims made against them? You can't really fully trust any of it from either the Republicans or the Democrats, because at best, it's a half-truth exaggerated into a lie, or at worst, a downright false accusation. Of course, in the United States, the government is of the people, by the people, and for the people. So it should come as no surprise that government is a reflection of the people, as I segue back into my point. Government isn't the only place where we see the modern McCarthyism taking place. Hyperbole, exaggerating statistics, extreme rhetoric, bullying, mudslinging, intimidation, equating accusation with guilt, demagoguery, smear tactics, digging up minutiae from a person's past. Holy shit, this is the cancel culture of the social media. The cancelers have all the fear, paranoia, and hatred of McCarthyism. Their crusade is based on rooting out people who believe in bad ideologies. They're willing to destroy anyone who doesn't fully support their cause. And they will look for any reason to take away the livelihood of people they deem unworthy. For me, it really came to the forefront with the attack on Chick-fil-A a few years ago. One executive, made a statement about gay marriage, and half the United States went ballistic. Hateful people, verbally attacking workers who were just trying to earn a living, Didn't even know what the hell was going on. Had nothing to do with it. The company does not discriminate against hiring LGBT workers. It was one guy voicing his opinion. Oh, but they give to charities that are against LGBT. Yeah, and if you've ever dropped a quarter to a Salvation Army kettle, so have you. Did you ever think to say, hey, some of us had heard what you said and we disagree. Can you please consider the consequences of your stance on gay marriage? Nope. It was all about banning Chick-fil-A and trying to run them out of business. It even got to the point where the United States Federal Aviation Administration responded to attempts by politicians in my hometown of San Antonio, Texas, that were preventing Chick-fil-A from opening in their airport. Our local political idiots forgot that per federal rules, they cannot, quote, prohibit airport operators from excluding persons on the basis of religious creed from participating in airport activities that receive or benefit from FAA grant funding, end quote. They're actually willing to risk funding for their airport just to try to hurt a business. That's how deep their hatred grows. I mean, what the fuck do they think they're going to do next? Stop travelers from coming into the airport if they have different ideologies? And if you boycott a business because they are not inclusive based on the fact that they support charities that don't support LGBT, then why don't you boycott charities that exclude those who believe in heteromonogamy? Because it's not about being inclusive. It's about trying to hurt people who believe different from you rather than trying to build bridges and come to a respectful understanding. So, what happened when half the United States went on a McCarthy-like crusade? The other half stood in line to purchase food from Chick-fil-A, and the company saw record sales. Just like with McCarthy, their tactics backfired. Speaking of backfiring tactics, I've talked about director James Gunn before on this podcast, but I think this is a good time to revisit the situation. A little over 2 years ago, Gunn had been frequently criticizing President Trump on social media, including one post implying the president gives government positions in return for sexual favors. Some far-right wannabe alpha male searched through Gunn's Twitter account and pulled some posts made about a decade ago, where Gunn made some really poor jokes about rape, pedophilia, and child abuse. Upon seeing the tweets, Disney, a company that prides itself on family and children entertainment, immediately fired Gunn. Now, I said at the time, and I still believe now, that I would not have fired him for that. Not only were the tweets 10 years old, they were also obviously miserable attempts at humor. On the other hand, I can understand why Disney did what they did, because they have a reputation to uphold. The interesting part in all this is how what had been leftist tactics to get someone fired got turned on a leftist. The critic became the criticized. After many people who worked with him gave their support and several meetings with Disney executives, Gunn was rehired. But the witch hunts have gotten even worse. Earlier this year, after the atrocity of George Floyd's murder, Hartley Sawyer, who played Elongated Man on the Flash television show, tweeted support for Black Lives Matter. So understand this, he is expressing his support for the cause. someone pulled random tweets from his account that were between 6 and 11 years old that contained tasteless jokes about racism and rape. Just like James Gunn's tweets, they were tacky and completely unfunny. But regardless that they were feeble attempts at humor, they were still meant for humor. Unfortunately, Hartley Sawyer does not have the stature of James Gunn. Sawyer hasn't directed movies that make hundreds of millions of dollars or boosted the careers of high-ranking Hollywood actors. No, Hartley just plays a B-list superhero on a CW show. Did anyone in Hollywood support him? Did anyone pause to try to get people to listen to reason? Nope. As I like to say, they put a James Gunn to his head. He was fired from the show with public castigation by his producer, showrunner, and even the lead actor. I've lost a lot of respect for the people creating that show and all the others in that shared television universe. Hell, just a few months ago, you heard me rave about Crisis on Infinite Earths. You know how much I like those shows. Maybe if Hartley Sawyer was making them millions, they would have been more forgiving. And goddammit, I like Elongated Man. I was thrilled when his character got added to the show. Even though I wasn't thrilled with the early development of the character, I thought it was getting better. Now that he's not on the show, it's no longer a high priority for me to watch it. Because all that's left is to go back to Flash continually doubting himself, keeping secrets from his team, and fucking up the time stream. I'd rather have Hartley Sawyer back. This was done to a small-time actor who was voicing his support for Black Lives Matter. This was done by Hollywood leftists who also support Black Lives Matter. This involved dumb brain droppings from years ago. This was a witch hunt, and Hartley Sawyer unfortunately got tied to a stake, and his Puritan co-workers happily lit the fire. This was McCarthyism, where even the people who knew him turned their back on him. These people worked with this actor for years. They knew damn well the tweets were only shitty jokes, but they cared more about grandstanding and their own reputations than doing what is just. Like McCarthyism, in your quest to find racism and homophobia, don't give a fuck for the consequences. Just ruin anyone you can so long as you look like the hero. Dig as far back as you need to find some fragment to bolster your feeble accusations. What's next? Condemn Mel Brooks for making Blazing Saddles? For fuck's sake, it's bad enough. I go to watch it on HBO Max, and there's a 3-minute warning lecture before the movie starts about how it was a different time. Some of us are adults. We can discern the stereotypes vis-a-vis the era of the film. I'm intelligent enough to understand what is humor in a movie and what is racism in real life. I don't need you monitoring my entertainment for me. I don't need a fucking warning label on my music. I don't need the app store to tell me the hookup app I downloaded is meant for people over the age of 18. These panic tactics, deeply rooted in paranoia, hatred, and fear, didn't help 70 years ago, and they don't help now. All they do is push the truly bad people deeper into the shadows where they live to fight another day and turn otherwise well-meaning people into crusading monsters. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.